start with group one, which is Tak.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. I think we enjoyed the lovely discussion. And the simple question is, we talked about case one, and we showed the disclosure written in page 23 and 24, and then asked the view of preparer. And then one of the preparers said, if I showed this disclosure to the CEO, CEO will kill me. That is the first reaction of the preparer. And actually, his point was very clear that it includes forward-looking information a little bit too much, and it's way too precise. So if we have such a kind of detailed forward-looking, you cannot escape from being risk of being sued. And that you could manipulate market by providing such a rosy forward-looking data, and then you could manipulate. So that causes serious consequences. That is his point. And the other member said it is quite difficult to audit, and that she doesn't think it's the right place to put it in the financial statement. Because once you put it in the financial statement, auditor needs to provide the decent audit procedure, and this is not really practical. So in this sense, in preparer's view, so it is not really practical. However, from the user's views, so user's view, user need some parameter or some verifiable number. Otherwise, users cannot really assess. So verifiable is not necessarily to be audited. Verifiable things is not necessarily too much precise. But the user need to map into the verifiable factors into their analysis, and so that they can verify the 1 year before and 1 year later, so compare it. So such kind of activity is really important. But having said that, having this precise is a little too much. And the listing all these metrics as a required is a bit too much. So therefore, he pointed most important verifiable number is return on invested capital. So they want to verify return on invested capital is working well or as expected. That is very important. Then you could drill down the elements of a return on investment capital so that you can know the margin or turnover. And if the acquisition is really material, then you need a little further information. But unless it is material, you don't really need. So that is the kind of idea we can provide in the either financial statement or management commentary. And of course, if it is not audited, then it shouldn't be a financial statement. So the place of information is one of the difficult things to discuss in the further discussion. And then when it comes to the verifiability, one thing we have to be careful is the time frame. So if we provide just the 2 years, then for some acquisition, it doesn't really meet because break-even point could be 6 years' time. So providing so kind of time frame information is also important. And also considering about the synergy, so synergy comes not only from the acquisition, but also comes from their own main business as well. So acquisition and main business, the balance is not really the point. In totality, whether or not they improved their growth rate, that kind of information is most important. And with respect to the improvement of IS 36, unanimously in our group, the first removal is not a good idea. So they need a pro forma information, even though it is not audited. something like a pro forma information is important. And the other smaller issues, so somehow some improvement is possible. That is our group.
Okay, thanks, Tak. Any comments from this group? No? Then we move to group two, which is Nick.
Thank you. So the first thing that we just got out of the way was to clarify that this was a material transaction and that these disclosures weren't intended to apply to all transactions, but also that it's important for users to have this type of information to be able to differentiate between the performance of the existing business from the acquired business and to have a good sense of whether the acquired business is delivering. There was a high degree of commonality in terms across the table, I'd say, in terms of the information in the pack was too granular. And actually, pairers were, I think, uncomfortable providing that detail, but users didn't want that kind of detail either, that there was a sense that it was better to provide some aggregated information about revenue synergies, about cost synergies, for instance. I think everyone recognised that there were some sensitivities around redundancy numbers, and that was particularly so in certain jurisdictions where there may be legal requirements, and again, I think a good degree of commonality there. There was a little more colour put on in terms of the requirements, in terms of being willing to accept ranges, for instance, in terms of synergies, but also being more specific in terms of are these OPEX savings, CAPEX savings, working capital savings, to provide information in terms of the one-off costs to realise those synergies. Are those cash costs or are they non-cash costs? And then to be able to look back to some of those targets, albeit if they're ranges, and to think about the revisions against those over a period of time. We did also have a discussion of forward-looking data in terms of the targets that may be provided for a particular transaction. And there was a discussion of whether actually the financial statements are a place for this information. But equally, there was recognition that management commentary is voluntary. It's not required in all jurisdictions. And so this data isn't necessarily universally available to the users of accounts. There was a discussion in terms of trying to... there was a suggestion in terms of trying to make the whole issue about forward-looking information more palatable. If this is a strategic transaction, the company would have put some forward indicators out into the marketplace at the time of the deal. Could the subsequent reporting within the financial statements refer back to those? Those are numbers put out in the public domain, and could I say the financial statements refer back to those as a benchmark? So I think the overall message, though, was probably we like information at a more aggregated level than had been provided in the examples, and a recognition of there are areas which are sensitive. And then we also discussed the suggested possible candidates for deletion in terms of disclosure. There were some very strong views about the need for pro forma information, although there was a quality warning about how this information is sometimes put together, and if we only knew, would we really want it? But generally a sense that the user needs to have something to base their forward-looking numbers on. There was also recognition that the existing requirement in terms of what's defined as profit is unclear, what that means, and what comes out in terms of that piece of information isn't always helpful today. In terms of the other disclosures, I think the only one that was made a strong case for retaining was around the what amount of goodwill is expected to be deductible for tax purposes. Otherwise, there really wasn't a strong consensus on the other two disclosures.
Okay. Thanks, Nick. Then we come to the second case study, which was more about information sent for an integrated business and acquisition. And group three has discussed it first. And Shamu.
Thank you. I would like to say thank you for all CMN members and GPP members are 3 and 3. They made a very productive contribution ideas on the issues of case 2 and the last one, case 3. But basically, before we are going into some specific questions on case 2, you know, we have shared some kind of a complexity of the M&A deals or the kind of a reporting, you know, or their systems. So, you know, among their GPIP members and CBank members shared that kind of difficulties, you know, challenges, and to make some kind of information. That's the general, you know, starting point we on these questions. First question we have the one is the combined measures are still useful. Generally, our CMAC members said yes, the acquired business might be better. However, if there is some kind of integration between these two acquired and existing businesses, the performance, some kind of measures on this combined business are still useful. So that's our CMAC members' idea. So on this specific question. And in addition to that, the information on this combined measures are basically cash flow information. This is the most important information on this combined measures. However, the other disclosure information on some other measures are still good. So, but basically, their cash flow information is a very good, important measure for these combined ones. We had a very good conversation on that question 4. Basically, what we had heard is the specific percentage of their acquired business in the combined business, 10%, 50%, 90%, that does not matter. If their acquired business is a material one or not, that's a very important kind of a judgment point. So if the acquired business is important, even that's included in combined business, in that case, generally CMAC members would like to have some kind of information, and they are still the combined business, if they can provide some measures of that combined business, are still there very useful information. So rather than some kind of quantitative measures, if they would like to have some kind of qualitative materiality, things to think whether this is useful or not. Let's go to the final question on whether we remove some existing disclosure requirements in IFRS 3. Yeah, that's still a good idea. However, as other breakout session groups, our CMAC members, GPF members, both agreed with that kind of pro forma information is still very useful. And also, very surprisingly, GPF members can provide this kind of information without any big cost. So it's a kind of some possibility we can keep this pro forma information. Maybe they can be provided to our users of this kind of information. But other disclosure requirements, they don't think that's very useful. However, the last one is that's page maybe 40. Some kind of gains and losses of all these items, assets, liability, income, the kind of thing. You know, this information is very useful for CMAC members. So they would like to have a disclosure requirement in hand, is not to remove that kind of requirement. So that's kind of one feedback among our CMEC members. And the others requirements, it's a good idea because those information will not be used by CMEC members. So generally, our joint discussion agree with a kind of a big, direction of today's paper, of the step. That's the kind of summary. If you would like to add to what I said, you can add,
I think at the start of the discussion, there was recognition that the example is a simplified example. Not all transactions would have that level of information or even have identified synergies. It could be just an asset acquisition. And the nature of those items probably varies by industry, and whether you or not your acquisition would be for synergies. Obviously, that would impact your subsequent ability to measure and track.
Okay.
Sorry, Martin, there's one more observation.
Okay.
In terms of the disclosures that we have at the moment, the comment was made that the IAS 34 requirement to show the disclosures required by IFRS 3 in full was quite onerous, given the different reporting timescales of interim versus final reporting.
Okay, group number four, it's myself. So first I have to say to focus a group on this question was quite difficult. But let me try. So first question was, okay, is this information provided, is that useful? And answers from CMAC members was, yes, maybe in this kind of case it is useful for if I want to judge is the acquisition successful, yes or no, but that is not what I wanted to know because I wanted to warn the revenue impact, EBITDA impact. I want to know what kind of new debt is taken, what kind of cash is spent, and what of kind of new shares are spent. So are different information which I'm interested in and maybe not this kind of information. But in this case, if it is a kind of question, okay, is the acquisition successful, yes and no, and maybe more from a stewardship perspective than from a predicting future cash flows kind of view, that maybe is helpful. I think that was then the conclusion of the discussion. Second was, given the fact provided, what additional information would GPF members provide in the disclosure? And the question was even more. The consensus was, okay, that is already a lot of detailed information and that is already too much and not anymore. And second, third question, given the fact provided, what additional information would CMAC members like to see? And that was what I already said in the first question, okay, that is a kind of different information and it was a kind of information that be able to calculate, okay, what is the return on capital spent, what is the kind of development based on integrated business, yes or no, that I can compare the kind of business trends and economic development of this kind of company, but maybe not this kind of information that is provided here. Question number four, do your response change if company Z represents 10, 15, or 19? Answer, yeah, clearly if it is only 10%, does not make sense because then it is a kind of integrated or combined information is not really reflecting the acquisition, so maybe it starts at least with over 50%, and then it does make some sense. Then the question, okay, which kind of disclosure should we or could we delete? When the first is pro forma, there was a clear and strong feeling that that is the most useful info about business acquisition, and we should not delete that, and because we should not delete it, is a kind of, as I said, kind of information where people, users can track business development, but also start to do a full year calculation on return on capital spent or employed. The rest, I think, was consensus. Okay, yes, maybe there is not a lot of use in this kind of information, and that could be deleted without a big lose of benefits in this kind of information. Anything to add from the group members? Because, as I said, it was difficult to summarize. Okay. Then I would like to open the whole round. Any kind of further comments? Mariela?
Yeah, I just thought it was very interesting going into this discussion, thinking about the case studies. I was expecting a very technical discussion, but actually there were three huge philosophical issues that emerged, and I think they need to be addressed, I think, probably at some level, in some shape or form. The first is basically the question what you can really expect from accounts, because, I mean, in my view, all of the numbers in the primary financial statements are obviously somewhat fuzzy, subjective, whatever you want to call it, outside of acquisitions. We also discuss measurement bases and whatever. And there seems to be some specific concern around M&A that the numbers are so much more subjective that you don't actually want to put them in because you're afraid of getting sued. And so I guess that is probably something that requires sort of like, you know, looking into the legal framework and, you know, whether, you know, it is really justified to basically, you know, remove these rules for M&A. And the second somewhat related issue is actually around the whole gestalt of corporate reporting, because there seems to be a lot of sympathy among preparers that, you know, all of the info that the users are asking for need to be disclosed, and they really, the users need to have them, but they just don't want to put them into the primary financial statements, because then it gets really scary, because it gets, you know, they feel it's too fuzzy, it can't be audited, and you can get sued over that. But of course, if you move it out of the primary financial statements, it moves to a sort of nirvana, because everything outside of the primary financial statements is not really the ISB's remit and is actually not very clearly and globally regulated. And is, of course, not audited, which, in a way, completely defeats the purpose. And the third point that I really picked up on was that, I mean, my understanding from everything the preparer said about the way acquisition models are built, there's really no way around goodwill impairment testing, because the models are just so complex and there are so many moving parts that you just cannot, you know, look at a set of 5 or 10 assumptions and say, tick, tick, tick the box, yes, this acquisition is panning out. Or yes or no. So the question is whether, you know, there is really, you know, sort of a philosophical basis for, you know, figuring out an alternative way to goodwill impairment testing, to let the users determine themselves if, you know, there might be some sort of a change in the perception of whether the acquisition is panning out or not. So these three items are just...
Maybe one response, because you said maybe financial statements are not the right place. It is a difficult discussion, because what we're doing in other projects is now to bring into the financial statements a kind of management performance measures or non-GAAP, because we're hearing from users, okay, that is helpful information, but the problem is it is not reconciled, it is not audited, and therefore it is not reliable, and you should bring it into the financial statements. Here it is now that when people say, okay, relevant information maybe, but we should not be audited, it's difficult to audit, and then maybe it is useful, but we should do it outside the financial. And I think that is a kind of, for me personally, I think is a debate which we must have, because when we have also this management accounting practice statement, and I think we have to figure out, okay, what is the boundaries of financial statements, what is management accounting practice statement, and what is maybe totally outside this remit, and that I think we need to do some more work to get a final clue that could be in and out.
I think just one top up on that one would be a lot of the information we're looking at, though, is future information. And so when you actually go to have an auditor auditing future-driven information and estimates, they can't do that without our assumptions. So they could audit to our assumptions, but they can't audit it completely independently when you're talking about revenue projections or items like that. So when we're talking about not putting it in the statements, we're talking about future information. And we're talking about legal obligations. We do an MD&A, and if you were to give guidance or a future-looking statement, we've got a page and a half of risk assessments around our assumptions saying this risk might be wrong because this might need to be assessed, because at the end of the day, because it's never perfect. So when you get to an auditor, what it will mean is our audit fees will triple if they have to try and do it, and they'll never actually be accurate. They can't be accurate. So that was the one point. On the materiality, and I think you brought up materiality, I think we should look at, I think the percentage of your balance sheet or whatever that looks like of the acquisition would be more clear. Because if it's an auditor's decision, they look back at their audit materiality. And their audit materiality may not move your balance sheet, may not move your share price. And so you may have disclosure on immaterial M&A. So I think you'll get a lot more of the preparer's buy-in if it is a material as compared to your market cap or your company size, not an auditor materiality. So if we can maybe get clarification around that, that would be very helpful as well, and probably get more support because we agree on the bigger moving numbers versus 18 pages of immaterial disclosure on M&A.
And I'm not so sure because when I have seen, for example, my home country, there is audited financial statements about forward-looking statements because in Germany and also in other European countries, it is mandatory that you give some kind of information, not in the financials, but in the management account practice statement. But this is also audited in some European countries, and auditors are able to sign off on that. And if you look at what we are doing in other standards, looking at IFRS 9, when we have the expected loss model, you have also to look in the future, and all the auditors have to audit that. If you look at our IFRS 17 now insurance, it is also you have to come up what is the expected future cash flows out of claims or whatever. It is also the company has to take a look into the future and that has to be audited. I don't know why is that so different from overall target, overall objective. Why is that cannot be audited, but specific ones can be audited, others cannot. But we need a more debate. But I'm not so happy if people say that is not possible, because we have examples where I think that is possible.
Yes, thank you. I show in the commentary of Doug relating to the materiality of the transactions that we are talking about here for this kind of disclosure. The other point that I will make clear is that the disclosures need to be related to the announce that we are making when we are acquiring the entity. It could be not a list of indicators that you are thinking that we need to provide, but it would be more that we promise to the market to achieve with the acquisition. So the indicators could be different, could be not only indicators relating to financial statement, could be indicators relating to market share, could be indicators relating to number of patients or a quantity of electricity or saving in the climate, I don't know. So that's why I insist that it's very difficult to put it in the financial statement. I joined your comment relating to what the European legislation is asking, and I have the personal experience of doing a pro forma, which is required for the European legislation for big acquisitions, more than 25% of the existing perimeters. And yes, the auditors issue a report, but they put everywhere that is unaudited. So please make the difference, which is a reporting that the auditors could be making, to what is the audit procedures and the audit standards that they need to follow in a financial statement.
Okay. I was very taken with Mariella's comment. I think what's being proposed is a very valiant attempt, but I think it's we're putting sticking plasters on when sort of major surgery is rather required. I think I can be contradicted, but I think everyone, all the preparers, totally respect that there is a need and a duty to hold management to account for M&A deals. This is very clear, and nobody's disputing it. I think the question is the financial statements the right place to be doing that? And I think we rather get trapped into doing that, because when we do, the problem to me with IFRS 3 is not the it's the recognition and measurement. We put this goodwill on the balance sheet, which in my terms is a fake asset.
In mine as well.
We put other assets and liabilities when we do an M&A deal that if we were doing it internally, we wouldn't put on the balance sheet. And once we do that, we then get trapped into this whole process of impairment and all of this stuff. And it sort of strikes me that we're still trying to fix something, and it's there's definitely something that needs to be fixed, but it's actually a more fundamental problem with, than that. You know, and then if you look at the disclosures, if you're investing 100 million in an M&A deal, you want all this disclosure about future performance, but if you invested internally on a capital project, no disclosure. I think there's a separate discussion, and again, I respect the external users' need for sort of forward-looking information, but that's not restricted to M&A deals. I suspect the reason you get trapped into discussing on M&A deals is, one, because you've got this goodwill impairment and all of that on the balance sheet. That's the main point where we get sucked into this disclosure topic.
Yeah. Aurelia?
Following on Ian's and Marietta's comments about the location of the disclosures, I think that these disclosures, they are helpful to understand the stewardship on mergers and acquisitions, but I have some doubts regarding the usefulness of that information to project cash flows, unless the entity under analysis has a program or expectation to make many mergers and acquisitions in the future, and then you can use past stewardship to assess whether the future mergers and acquisitions will be successful. But out of that, I have some doubts regarding the usefulness of the information to project cash flows, and then hence makes me wonder whether the financial statements actually are the location for that type of disclosure. Just one more comment on the scope, because we were discussing a case in which the business acquired is combined with existing assets, and then we use performance indicators to try to analyze of the combined assets to try to analyze the acquisition, the business combination. But since these indicators, they cover previously existing assets of the entity, I think it goes a little bit beyond the scope of analyzing just the business combination and starts analyzing the stewardship of existing assets of the acquirer.
Well, I think it is linked, because if management has demonstrated, for example, 3 times that it is not able to successfully do a business acquisition, that would have an impact on future cash flows. I would assume that. And therefore, I think this information is helpful, useful, not only for stewardship, it is linked also, I think, to future cash flows. Steve?
I think the users in our group also identified management trust as being a key factor on this. One observation, the detailed requirements that we've been looking at as examples today on future projections, I think there's a significant risk that that would actually change the way businesses are integrated in order to facilitate the production of this information. And what that could mean is that actually you're not gaining the benefits from the integration that you would otherwise have gained, and therefore reducing shareholder value.
Peter?
I just wanted to say, in the context of Ian's comment on fake asset, the reason that we're having this debate is that when you buy a machine, there's arguably a market for it with a market price, that liquidity somewhere. When you buy a company, there's this one component where the company decides to fork out a lot of cash, my cash, and I just want to know whether that was a good idea or a bad idea. This is what this discussion is about. As to audited versus not, frankly, I don't think that's the main thing. There is enough credible disclosures that happen outside of the audited financial statements. But I just want to know if you spent the money well, and that's really what we're asking for.
Okay. You lucky?
Well, one comment from a different angle. I think we need to be sensitive to disclose a granular detail of integration plan as a part of acquisition rationale, especially when it involves massive layoffs of existing employee pool. Disclosure of those details which might trigger some uneasiness of those affected employees. So that could be somewhat detrimental to combined entity. That's my point. Thank you.
Marietta?
Just a very short follow-up, Martin, to your comment that this is all relevant to future cash flows. I completely agree. And I just wanted to add that also it can be very, very difficult to actually analyze the legacy business in the context of complex and serial M&A. It can be difficult even without M&A, but, you know, the M&A tends to obscure everything. So if we don't really get good data on, you know, how the integration, how the subsequent business is performing, you know, how can we get to the bottom of, you know, whether the legacy business is falling off a cliff and whether that might have been the reason for the acquisition. So that's another reason why it's very important.
Can I just, sorry, flag one thing that in terms of, again, this stewardship cash flow requirement or cash, just as useful, the revision to the conceptual framework in 2018 explicitly said general purpose financial information are there to help provide stewardship information as well as information about future cash flows, which are related often. But.
Okay. Anything from the staff? You are happy with all the answers? You know how to draft the standard now? Okay, it's not the case, but I think that was not the last time we'll be discussing goodwill disclosure and this stuff. Now we have coffee break and we'll be back at 3:30. Thank you.